Welcome to another session of Presenting Our Presence. Presenting Our Presence is a podcast that amplifies the voices of Indigenous people who work at the University of Alberta. Today, the co-hosts are Michelle DeRocher and myself, Florence Glanfield, and we are joined by our colleague who works in the Alberta School of Business. Gil, I invite you to introduce yourself in whatever way you are most comfortable. Thank you for being with us today.
Gil Anderson, Nitsigasun. Hello, my name is Gil Anderson. Thank you for inviting me here. I am very much looking forward to this. I am the Indigenous Programs Coordinator for the Alberta School of Business. I am the inaugural Indigenous Programs Coordinator. I currently have no programs quite yet to coordinate, but we're working on that.
And how long have you been in that role?
Since the end of March. So just a little over 2 months, almost 2.5 months now. So pretty new to it. And it's going quite well. I'm happy with the reception that I'm getting from the Indigenous community and from the School of Business. Everybody just seems to have been waiting for this to happen, kind of thing. And it's great. I'm just over the moon about that.
That's really exciting. Michelle, did you wish to start the conversation today?
Sure. Thanks, Florence. Thanks again, Gil, for being here. I'm really excited about this conversation. I don't know a lot about gardening, and I definitely don't know a lot about the Three Sisters method. And I understand that's a passion of yours, and also I think maybe what we're looking at in your mm-hmm. background.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
The Three Sisters the way I learned it was a Haudenosaunee method of gardening. It's about an 18-inch across mound with, it can be either flattened or have a little depression in the middle. And it's four corn plants surrounding the depression. And then a few inches below the corn plants you plant beans. And then on each side of it, each corner of the mound, diagonal to each other, you plant squash. Now what happens is that the corn provides something for the beans to climb. The beans provide nitrogen for the corn, and the squash provides ground cover for the whole thing. And I got into it because it healed my relationship with gardening. Because growing up, my mom, of course, had gone to residential school. And so when they had their garden, it was very much in that colonial method of gardening, the rows, all the thing, and made it miserable kind of thing. It was a chore that had to be done. And they got mad at me if I was like, I don't want to do this. This is really hard work. It's hot. And it wasn't an enjoyable experience, you know. And for years and years, my wife was like, oh, I'm going to put it in the garden. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I don't want to involve. I don't want to be doing it. It's just, you know, it's just, to me, it was just a chore. And, you know, I mean, I had a bit of PTSD around it because, you know, I mean, my mother in her later years was like, yeah, this is just kind of the way we were taught in residential school. And like, we got yelled at for breaking stuff, and we got yelled at for not doing things right. We got yelled at for this and yelled at, and, you know, so it just wasn't a pleasant experience. But when the pandemic broke out, of course, everybody was kind of looking for things to do, kind of thing. And I had always been interested. Like, I thought that was really neat, that whole Three Sisters thing, this companion planting, as the settlers call it. And I was like, well, I'm not doing much, you know. Gardening may be a lot of work, but I'd really like to just re-indigenize gardening, you know. And so a Three Sisters garden is supposed to be huge. You know, I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, it's like an acre per person to feed people. But, you know, I thought, well, I can do a few mounds. I do four. I think I have four in the background there. And yeah, we just started doing it. And I was like, this is great, because I weeded it twice in the whole gardening thing, you know. And it was, you know, and it says, the thing that I read, I Googled it. I didn't, I Googled the method kind of thing. And it, you know, there's all kinds of information on it. And I also did talk to Kat Barnes. You guys know her, of course. She's Haudenosaunee. And said, you know, we've been doing this. And she's like, oh yeah, that's a great method. You know, and I'm also, I'm a Michelle Calaboo, and we have Mohawk ancestors that came out with the fur trade. Iroquois Louis came out to Fort Edmonton in the late 18th century. And so I was like, okay, well, not really culturally appropriate, yes. You know, but apparently they did the Three Sisters as far south and west as the Apache, you know. So it's a method that pretty much can be adapted wherever you want. And like I said, it's easy. It said it requires 1 inch of rain a week kind of thing, you know, which isn't bad. And it kind of spurred some questions in my mind, or some theories in my mind. Like we hear about the Haudenosaunee and the Iroquois. They're also powerful and warlike and fierce and you know, kind of in that colonial milieu about that. And I thought about the Three Sisters method of planting, and I thought, you know, I wonder if part of their power and influence comes from the fact that they had this method of planting that produced a surplus, a good surplus that they would use for trade. And that is part of how they grew their, and if there's any master student out there, you know, that, or potential master student, that would be a good thesis to explore and research. Was that part of their power and influence, is that they had this agricultural technique that gave them a good surplus of crop, and that they could trade and do all kinds of, like, and gain influence through trade, rather than just that, oh, they're all warlike and all that kind of stuff, you know. So yeah, and it helped heal my relationship with gardening, because I enjoy it now. We planted it well, we were going to plant it in the Mae-Long weekend. But of course, the Mae-Long weekend had all this smoke, and they said, no, don't go and work outside and do all this kind of stuff. So it kind of got put off. But we went to Coleman's and got pre-grown corn. So they were a few inches tall, like an inch or two tall. And we planted those just this past Friday or so. And they're already about this tall. And there is a thing to it where you don't plant it all at once. You plant the corn first, and when it's about 4 inches tall, you plant the beans. And then I think we plant the squash. I can't remember exactly when we plant the squash. But I was also thinking about that. I'm like, okay, the Haudenosaunee aren't going to say, okay, it's 18 inches and 6 inches tall. Those weren't measurements that they would use. So I'm like, okay, maybe they're like, okay, it's got to be as long as my forearm. The thing's got to be as deep as my thumb, you know, kind of. And that's what I did this past time when I went to plant the beans. I just went drop, drop, kind of thing. As opposed to going, oh, it has to be an inch deep. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to try to make it as, and I didn't measure the mounds or anything like that. I like eyeballed it kind of. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, it looks about 18 inches, okay, kind of thing. And I was just, and it does, there are, and I probably should have brought this up and researched it and Googled it and told you, but it's like planting should be done at this point kind of thing. And that, like, I think it's when a certain leaf has come out. And if you're watching this, you can Google it. And that's when you plant the corn. And then, of course, when you know, I was like, oh, it's my hand tall, so now I can plant the beans kind of thing, you know. And then I don't know when to plant the squash, but there's probably like, oh, when when this certain thing has happened in these mounds. And I just love it. And there, like, and it percolates in my head all kinds of things. And I can probably talk this entire podcast about it. So are there any questions, first of all?
Oh, yeah, Gil, I was thinking about that. I really appreciated you moving into the space of how they're being planted, right? Because I was wondering, do they all get planted at once? Then my question was going to be, is the harvesting all at once, though, is the fruit of these plants, are they all ready, or do they sort of stagger as well? And so I was just curious about that.
It staggers. Like the corn is usually ready by the end of August, and the beans are ready in September, and the squash, of course, can go right till October, right till the first frost, you know, depending on the squash. And you can use, I haven't done this yet, but I'm going to try to find like some traditional maize and more, not being in that area, like around where they were, you know, east of the Mississippi kind of thing, and south of the Great Lakes kind of thing. It's a different climate. So you're not, the things that would thrive there aren't necessarily going to thrive here. So I did a lot of research as to what kind of corn thrives here, what kind of beans thrive here, what kind of, you know, and sort of adapted it that way. But I would like to do more of a Haudenosaunee traditional, like maize, whatever beans they would have used and whatever squash they would have used. It probably won't work as well, like I said, because it's a different climate. But and that they may ripen at the same time, and you can, you know, harvest them. And funny, that brings me back to a conversation I had with a guy just last weekend. We were talking about harvesting. Because I was like, why have we gone away from this? And he, well, you know, there's no machines to harvest that kind of stuff. It'd have to be harvested by hand. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, look, engineers are very smart. You give them a problem like that, and they'll do up something that can do it. You know, I mean, I said to him, look, there are stories of like guys in Africa who make electric generators out of junk that they find lying around. We can probably invent a machine that can harvest this stuff without wrecking the mounds and all that kind of stuff, you know. So we just have to be innovative, right? And so so that we can use these techniques. Like the colonizer settlers are coming to us for sustainable techniques, right? So this is one of them, because this is a very balanced way of growing things. I remember my wife and I having a conversation about this couple had bought this farm that was basically depleted. The soil had been depleted, and so it was just dirt. And they were trying to revitalize it and make it more a viable farm. And I thought, well, the Three Sisters is a good way of doing that, because the Haudenosaunee also had, where it was, the dirt was poor, they would, something like a week or so beforehand, they would actually put fish like guts or heads or something like that into the soil to give it some fertilizer. You know, I mean, there's so much out there that can be done, and it's really not that hard. You know,
the way that you're describing it to me, and you're talking about like the stages of growth. So that was going to also be part of my question when Florence mentioned like, what is the timeline for growing things? And so I'm also thinking, I don't know if you know anything about this, because it may just be like in the Haudenosaunee lore. Is there a reason why it's Three Sisters? Like, it's like specifically that they decided that's how they would describe it. Like, because in my mind, I'm like, oh, like big sister, middle sister, little sister. And I'm like looking at the way that they grow, but I'm like, but why, do you know why exactly?
It was a big, Kat was like, I don't remember the conversation, but she was just sharing with me about how her grandmother did that. You know, like she would grow three sisters and just like, yeah, that's a really, you know, like encouraging me to do it and saying, you know, like telling me that it's like, yeah, that's an old technique and that it should be revitalized kind of thing amongst as many nations as possible, because I'm sure that there were other nations that did the three sisters method as well. It's just that Haudenosaunee are the sort of the torch carriers for that kind of thing. Doesn't say why it's called Three Sisters though.
I also think that this could, just based on like when we're talking about when they harvest them, if they are harvested around a similar time, like cooking them together, like making a meal of those three seems it would be part of the
corn, pumpkin and squash, corn, pumpkin and bean soup.
I'm sure it's there. Google that one too.
I usually grow pumpkin as the squash. There are other squashes, of course. My wife likes spaghetti squash and summer squash and stuff like that. But I'm a big fan of pumpkin. And you can actually interchange some of these things. You can use sunflowers instead of corn. You can use peas instead of beans. And watermelon instead of squash. Like there's anything that'll provide ground cover. Anything that will climb and anything that will grow straight, kind of thing, right? And so I'm right now just experimenting with the stuff that I know, the stuff that I've heard, and sometimes will, like, I don't know if you can tell in this picture, but behind all my plants there's sunflowers in the back, kind of thing. But yeah, it also reminds me of, I was watching The Walking Dead, of all things. And the later seasons take place in Virginia. And that's Three Sisters territory, right? That's where there would have been Three Sisters gardens amongst the nations there. And there's this one settlement where they had these huge fields of corn. And I'm like, why just corn? Why aren't they growing the Three Sisters? It's like they're doing this all by hand, right? Because there's no machines, there's no gas. You know, you're lucky if there's horses, kind of thing. And I'm like, why are they not doing the Three Sisters? You know, because it's such a simple method of planting and growing. You know, I mean, watering them, you're going to be near a water source. You can create a watering can of some sort, kind of thing, and a watering bag, and that's probably exactly what they did. They could just go along and just water, you know, in times of rain, because they would be close to a water source. You know, that's just Indigenous Settlement 101. You know, anyway.
Gil, I want to shift it a little bit, because I was really fascinated in thinking about your new role. As you know, in this Alberta School for Business, and this metaphor of the three sisters, right? And to think about the planting of seeds, the building of relationship, and the generative spaces that are present in the thinking about the way in which the corn, the beans, and the squash grow together. And so my head and heart went to thinking about spaces for Indigenous students at the University of Alberta, and how the garden and your work as a inaugural gardener, a healing gardener, and now going into this inaugural role, and in some way being invited to think about fertile spaces in your work.
Well, my work is a fertile space, because this is a field that hasn't been planted before, really. You know, I mean, the university in general, of course, recruits Indigenous people, and they can apply wherever they want, kind of thing. But being specific about bringing in Indigenous people, creating a comfortable place for them in the School of Business, kind of thing, good fertile ground for them to grow, right? And this, and I have a spiel too about Indigenous people in business. Indigenous people are not strangers to commerce. I've said this, my colleagues that are probably going to listen to this have heard me say this a million times, and I'm going to say this till probably the day I die, or at least the day I retire from this, that Indigenous people in North America, from the Isthmus of Panama to the Arctic, from the West Coast to the East Coast, we had trade routes all across this continent. We were not strangers to commerce. We traded things, goods would flow across this place, you know. And like I said, I think that when I think about that, about how we would trade, we would trade for, you know, I mean, they would do archaeological digs and find, oh, there's seashells in this plains settlement. It's like, well, that's because it, you know, traveled across these trade routes. That's where that's how the colonizers established their trade routes. They just used the existing ones that were here already. And the Three Sisters makes me think about how, and that's what also made me think about that surplus that the Haudenosaunee would have had from this agriculture and agricultural technique. And that, of course, they were entrepreneurial and they were traders. And they would trade, and that would get them influence, because it's like, hey, I've got all this stuff that can feed you people. We trade for this and that and the other thing. And, you know, and a confluence of all that. And telling Indigenous people that we're not strangers to commerce. We did it differently than the colonizers and the settlers do it. We're more community oriented. But that's how then, and it's that Three Sisters, that intertwined thing. Our businesses are intertwined. It's community oriented, you know. It's not a solo mono thing to us. We're more interested in entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship, something that'll help the community kind of thing, and small businesses rather than what the non-Indigenous students would do kind of thing. And yeah, there is a connection there, and it's something that I want to encourage and help grow that, because there are never mind businesses that want to hire Indigenous people, communities want to hire Indigenous people that have business degrees to help them run the businesses that they're burgeoning, kind of thing. You know, so it's a win-win. Win-win is always good. We're going forward in a good way.
I can see this Three Sisters method as a way to look at like cohorts of students. Mm-hmm. Right? You're going to have your inaugural students who mm-hmm. are the corn, and they're going to be there for a year before their next group comes in, and then they help them grow. And then we have another cohort, like, it doesn't seem like that happens a lot on campus, like that we're helping all of our students, yes, mm-hmm. but having our students help the next line of students. Mm-hmm. I think using that Three Sisters as the metaphor could be like really beautiful.
Yeah, well, we are talking about that in the School of Business, is having like a mixture of all the Indigenous students, you know, having a small little orientation for the first years, and then having a mixer, and yeah, that's a good, I'm stealing that, Michelle. I'm absolutely stealing
it. It's all yours. That's all yours.
We're going to do some Three Sisters gardening here.
Well, you know, Gil, that's not a bad idea.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, and because the metaphor can also be for the experience of connecting with the land and being in relation and learning about like you said, if the soil wasn't healthy, how did ancestors, because it's what's fascinating to me when I first learned about Three Sisters gardening myself is I wonder how it became a practice within those Haudenosaunee peoples. And it wasn't, from my experience, a practice within the plains. And is it because of space? Like, was this a way to solve a practical problem? We needed to have, like, agriculture. And I don't know. Like, it would be interesting to me to think about that as well.
I've thought about that as well. And I have a theory. Of course I have a theory. And if there's a master's student listening, you can look into this. But it's about the buffalo. The buffalo traveled around. So we traveled around. The Cree and the Métis, we traveled around. Three Sisters planting, of course, is the Haudenosaunee had settlements, they had stockades, they had, you know, a much more permanent life kind of thing. And so they could have these big fields of Three Sisters and tend to them and all that kind of thing. Whereas the plains people, we would be following the buffalo because that was our main source of food, right? So that, but like I said, there were others that may have had contact with the buffalo because the buffalo ranged pretty far south. That they still gardened as well. You know, they had those Three Sisters types of gardens, but there were other methods of agriculture as well. Now I'm segueing into permaculture, food forests. I've heard stories of how when the colonizers first got here, they were amazed at, like, just they'd be able to walk down a trail and there'd be berries there, there'd be tubers to dig up, there'd be fruit growing from the trees kind of thing. And of course they thought that they'd found the Garden of Eden, and that it didn't occur to them that was a method of agriculture that indigenous people used that they call permaculture now, or food forests, wherein you encourage the growth of certain foods that there are certain plants that provide food, like, you know, Saskatoons, things like that, or strawberries or blueberries or certain tubers kind of thing, or fruit trees, it's things like that. And that's also another thing that I would be interested in. If I ever get a nice piece of land, I'm going to create a food forest. And it was I think that wherever we were, that we could do that, that's what happened. And I think that I theorize, and of course I could be wrong, and there are probably people who are going to be able to prove me wrong, but the Cree people were following the buffalo, but they also had these food forests of Saskatoons and things like that, where they would encourage that, because, okay, we're following the buffalo, we got this camp here, we got this camp here, and we're encouraging on these travels all of these patches of food forest and permaculture, so that we have things to supplement our buffalo. Not just, oh, we found this, we encouraged this to grow here kind of thing. And that, I think that was probably a more plains way of doing it. Is it because apparently a food forest takes about a few hours of tending a month, you know? And I love that. I loved it that the things that we used to grow, the agriculture we had, was simple and easy. None of this monoculture, scrabbling at dirt, kind of weeding till your arms fall off kind of thing, but stuff that was more of encouragement and more in tune with nature and helping nature, not conquering nature or tearing things up and putting things in kind of thing, you know? And that things worked in concert, whether it was permaculture or Three Sisters or us following the buffalo. You know, it wasn't us forcing things, but encouraging things and helping things grow where we needed them to grow kind of thing. And we can do that now. We can. But, you know, I mean, it'll take some changing some minds kind of thing. And minds are changing. I've noticed that. I've actually noticed that. Minds are changing. people are reaching out to Indigenous people more and more for their ideas, for their ways of being and knowing kind of thing, because it's almost like what Crazy Horse said, that there will come a time in seven generations when they will come to us and they will ask us for our wisdom kind of thing, you know. And it seems more and more that we're being asked for how did we do things? Well, okay, here's how we did it. And oh, that actually works really well. Yeah, it does. Tried and true.
Well, and it's fascinating. It works with the seeds of now too, because so many of the seeds are, I would suggest, probably are genetically modified, right? And that the principle can still work, which is long-standing. And for me, it's the principle of relationality. And the three sisters are taking care of one another, right? The corn is providing the bean, the structure to support itself. And then the squash is ensuring that the moisture in the ground, in a way, and the nutrients are supporting for the corn and the beans, right? And it's about relationship and caring for one another. And this is what our not more than human or non-human relatives can teach us.
Yeah, exactly. And it like I said, it really healed my relationship with gardening. Like I, even just talking about it and thinking about it, I'm just, oh yeah. It's so like, I'm so grateful for that, you know, because I my parents used to garden, and you know, I mean, my grandparents were farmers and things like that, you know, and it just like, and it just makes me feel really good that I can go dig into the earth and do something that my ancestors would have done. And I just, oh, I lost the train of thought. Do something that my ancestors have done and just retake that kind of thing. Retake that feeling of moving forward in a good way, you know, and connecting to my ancestors and healing generational trauma as well. Being excited about gardening, right? And making, hopefully getting my daughter into gardening kind of thing. She will help kind of thing. And she's interested in it. So it's good. It's good. You know, hopefully with this, we can interest more people. And we'll have this enormous food forest and Three Sisters Garden in Edmonton, or something. You know, something like that.
I'm noticing the time is coming close to an end. I'm going to invite Michelle to bring forward any wonders or curiosities from Gil's words. Michelle?
Thanks, Florence. Yeah, so when you were talking about this being healing and everything, and you mentioned your mother had residential school experience, has she chimed in on what you're doing? Does she?
Unfortunately, my mother passed about.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, before I got into this, I get the feeling that she's probably quite proud that I'm doing this, and that, oh, finally Joe is getting in. My parents called me Joe because my father was Gilbert. Oh, Joe is finally getting into gardening. And my dad's like, I'm just doing it the easy way. That's good.
That's really beautiful that you can also kind of do this in their honor, right? Mm-hmm. To something that they did as business, as, you know, taking care of themselves, you can do again, but in a way that reclaims the indigeneity of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to my childhood backyard, and I think, you know, we could have had like a good 16 mounds, you know, for the size of the garden we had. But it was all peas, carrots, that really strong tasting lettuce that nobody likes, potatoes, you know, tomatoes, things like that. But we could have had like a good, at least 16 mounds that I think of, because I'm looking at the size of the mounds and look at the size of my backyard compared, you know, thinking about comparisons. I mean, of course, my childhood backyard was huge to a child, you know, but I'm thinking we could have had a fair amount there. And there are some Three Sisters Gardens, where they it's the corns and the beans are in the center, and all around it is the squash. I've seen that as well. I don't have a big enough garden for that, but I thought I'd do the mounds. And you know, it's good survival stuff.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, Gil, as I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm looking at the background behind Michelle, right? Mm-hmm. Michelle's got the surveyed landscape of the Métis settlement that she's from, and behind you is the circular notion, and it's really reminding me just of the ways in which colonial structures, the surveying of the land, just started to describe the landscape in new ways. And so as settlers came in then, and as practices moved away from the relational practices in this gardening example, we went to rows, and we went to rows where people, machines started to help plant, right? So it was no longer, it became a set of acts that were no longer questioned about how we did it, perhaps. It was getting it done, right? And as land became larger pieces. And I think of the farm implements and the tractors and the rows and rows in the communities that I knew as a child. So I loved the conversation today, and I thank you for introducing us to the Three Sisters. And to think about that in relationship to the work that we do at the University of Alberta, mm-hmm. you know, and the contrast with the rows and mm-hmm. the relational pieces that are mounds and sort of clusters. So thank you so much for being with us today.
I'll just echo Florence's words. Thank you so much. I've got some Googling to do now too, because I would love to learn more about this. Mm-hmm. And especially I'm interested in recipes to see if these three things go together in a meal as well. So mm-hmm. thank you very much, Gil. Hi, hi.
And thank you. I said, I'm just bursting with being able to tell people this kind of thing. It's like, oh, my Three Sisters Garden. So you have this and you have this, you know, kind of thing. And I could expound on that for like, we could go on for another hour, I'm sure. I didn't even touch on the Coyote and Crow tabletop RPG that mentions the Three Sisters. You know, so, and I enjoyed this. I enjoyed talking. I enjoyed talking to the two of you, and thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Gil. And that was the Coyote and the Crow RPG.
Coyote and Crow tabletop role-playing game.
Okay. And this is the new game you mentioned, I think, you were playing, right?
That's right. It takes place in an uncolonized 22nd century North America.
Well, on that note, we'll leave that anticipatory set for listeners to go and learn more about the game, see how it's in relation to the Three Sisters Gardening. And thank you so much for joining us today and being a part of presenting our presence.
Thank you.